Well, let's turn our attention, and we're going to be looking to Scripture here in 1 Samuel. Real quick announcement, Stephanie Wade back here, she's planning on moving out of Eagle River into Anchorage, and the dates, she needs some help on that, and a truck or two to haul her material and everything in her home to Anchorage will be at the end of October here, October 28th and 29th. That's a Monday and Tuesday. She's looking to get out of the apartment over here by the end of that month, moving to Anchorage. So if you have a vehicle and you can look at your calendar, see if they're available for that or can lend a truck for that purpose, then let her know. And she's back there. And I'll send out an email and kind of get that general announcement out for others. So I just wanted to let you all know regarding that and see if there's some people who can help out there. Okay? All right. Tonight, 1 Samuel chapter 17. We talked about the story of the life of David, where he's coming from and where he is in God's purposes and plans here, as we see from the book of Samuel, 1 Samuel into 2 Samuel and then 1 Kings, where this man and this person highlighted by God, it comes into play for us and is a significant figure in the history of humanity and the biblical history as well. And we're going to come to this chapter 17, which is a famous Sunday school chapter for the kids. The kids are familiar with us, one, because this is David and Goliath. This is where David meets the giant. And everybody knows the story of David and Goliath. We find this story early on where David begins to come into the scene here. Saul is the king. Saul has been the king, but now he's had the kingdom from Samuel declaring to him it's going to be ripped away from him and given to a better man. And that better man in chapter 16 was the one that Samuel went to Bethlehem to anoint. And that would be this young man, David, who is the youngest of eight brothers in the house of Jesse in the village of Bethlehem. And now this David is there, but he's not given the kingdom yet. We're still early, and we see this amazing scene here of a battle in a valley called Elah, and a battle between these two armies, these two forces, the Philistines and Israel. Now, everybody knows this story. It's a story that most of us are probably familiar in terms of the underdog claiming victory over the favored giant. Movies are made after it. Even Christian movies are made after it for football teams that win and they defeat the giant because they're the underdog, and that's the great story. And that's a typical Hollywood type of theme. You get the person who's underrated, the person who's weak, and he finds a way into the victory in the battle that he is thrust into and is the hero in the end. It's an amazing story that David is telling there, but that's not really the point of the story. Goliath has been viewed in some ways by some people as kind of like the devil in our battlefield of faith and spiritual war. David is kind of the Christian, and he's needing the Lord to help him. He doesn't have a lot there to going on his side, and so he has to trust God to bring him through the victory of this battle. Giants can be overcome if you just believe. Being courageous in the face of your Goliaths, whether it's the bully down the street or your own poor self-image, whatever it may be, there's all sorts of ways in which the story of David and Goliath gets allegorized and thrown around and applied to our life. And those are nice, but what does the story actually mean? What is this chapter all about? See, this story in the narrative of the life of David is not about Goliath and David's battle. That serves as part of the narrative of a greater theme, a more important theme that I think a lot of people miss. As much as it sets the stage, this really is not about David and Goliath or even David and the Philistines. This story is set within the context of a different type of battle. It's a battle between David and Saul that is beginning to brew. And it comes from or begins in this battle, because we already see Saul in chapter 16 who is overcome or tormented by an evil spirit, and he is now in this disposition mentally and spiritually, which is pitiful. And at the same time, it says God took the spirit of the Lord from David, or from Goliath. Turn back there, chapter 16, verse 14. The spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and a harmful spirit from the Lord tormented him. You see this happening, and at the same time, in the verse before that, the spirit of the Lord rushed upon David from that day forward, and Samuel rose up. And so you see this juxtaposed thing happening where you have the king, the ruler of Saul of Israel, and David, this young man, and there's this change now. And it's a transition. And in the midst of this transition, this battle scene plays out and results in that juxtaposed relationship between Saul and David now taking on legs and taking on a whole different thing. But even that is not the point of the story. Even that is not really what ultimately we should draw from this passage here. What we want to see is what this book of Samuel is trying to lay out for us, that David, this man, is the man that God has chosen, the man who God has placed his spirit upon and is going to raise up and develop and grow into a man after God's own heart, who will prove that man after God's own heart, and will show it in ways in his life. And one of these is in the scene here, in which God is raising this one up, and God will have his king. God will have his ruler, his choice in place, which ultimately is a type, as we talked about earlier this morning, with Adam being a type of Christ. There is David also a type, a prefigure of the greater king of God's choice, and that is Christ. Christ. So what is going to be highlighted in David's heart here and what's going on with David is something that we should see real quickly, jump real quickly to our Lord Jesus Christ. But what is the main thing? What is this going to be about, this battle? Well, I'm going to give you a title here. You've got the wrong title, I believe, on your page there. I think that was a typo. And I might have written it down wrong, or our secretary typed it down wrong, thinking one, because we see a man after God's own heart, right? Well, that's not a title. What I want us to see is a man after God's own honor. Man after God's own honor. This story, in this narrative, about David and Goliath, is about David and Saul, is about David in his passion for the honor and glory of God. And in that is evidence or the indication of the Spirit of God on him. The Spirit of God is with him, and with him you're going to see the evidence of that in how he responds to a situation like he has here in this battle. This is the greater theme that rules the text, that's the honor and glory of God. God's honor and God's glory was undermined by Saul when he chose to do it all for his own glory. It was undermined in that way, and thus God took the kingdom of Israel, his people, away from him and was going to give it to one whose heart was for the Lord. And being for the Lord, he will act, he will serve, he will rule this kingdom and even enter into battles like this with this passion in mind. I will do this for the honor of God. I am consumed with the glory and honor of God. Where have you heard that phrase before? Do you remember Jesus when he came into the temple and he saw what was happening and he turned into indignation here, anger? Why? Because the scripture said he was consumed with the glory of God here. He was consumed for the name of the Lord to be honored, and his house, which was the temple there, would be a place that would lift high God's name and bring honor to his name. And that was being stolen at that time. And so he moved in and cleaned the deck. He swabbed the deck of all the filth and moved it out. So there's something of a similarity between what we see in Jesus and what we'll see in David in this chapter. This would be a test. This would be one of the first tests of David's character. Or a test in the sense trying to develop and grow his character. He's still a very young man. And the question will be, will his zeal, will his fidelity for God and the name of God stand tall, or will it cower in fear in his tent like Saul? That's the question that's going to be answered here. Two people are lifted up here, and it's not Goliath. Goliath just creates the narrative or the crisis of the moment. It's Saul and David. Saul is in his tent in dismay, wondering what to do. David is at the front line thinking, you hear this guy? You hear what's going on out here? Who's going to stand up to this? Is anybody going to stand up to this? And you see this amazing comparison between these two kings. What we find here is that God's reputation, God's honor, God's glory is the driving concern of David's heart, even as a young man. And we would want Saul and his people, the people of Israel and the armies, to have that same driving concern in their heart, but it's just not there. They are in dismay and they are fearful. So David is driven by passion to honor God, that God's name would be defied. I will not stand for that. I will not stand for such blasphemy. So the focus is not on David's courage, really. And he had a lot of it here. But it's on his zeal for the glory of God. That's what consumed him. Even to throw himself into a one-on-one battle with a person who clearly has more experience, more strength, more height, more weaponry, that this should not even be a difficult battle. But that person was a blasphemer of God's glory. And David, in his faith in God to be with him in this great battle, is what stands out. The Lord is with me. Just as the Lord was with me as I took care of sheep. We'll see that in a bit. As he's convincing Saul, let me go out and fight this guy. And Saul's like, well, wait a minute here. Well, let me explain to you. I don't care how much experience that dude over there, that Philistine, he just keeps saying that Philistine has. I've had bears, I've had lions attack the sheep, and I took care of them. The Lord was with me there. The Lord will be with me as I go fight this man. There's a faith there in this, and a wisdom that he would need to engage the obstacles and challenges like this as he faces them as king. So let's just shy away from the cleverness of David. Let's shy away from the ideas that why did he take five stones? I've heard this before. He picked up five stones, put them in his bag. It's probably because there are five giants, Goliath and the others, there is one stone per giant. I've heard that before, and I'm like, well, that's nice, except it doesn't say that. So the question, why did he pick up five stones, is answered just the same way I asked my young children about things. Why did you do this? Because. That's about as good as an answer I can give it. What about David's weaponry? Why did he take the sling as opposed to taking up the armament of Saul? And we try to nitpick all this, and it's really very simple here because David's familiar with a sling more than he is with the sword. It's a little too big for him. Okay, it's just very simple, common sense things. Let's not go too far into the details of that. Let's stay with the main thrust, and that's the glory of God that consumed this man. So here's a great victory for the nation of Israel, and it results, as we'll see, and it just kind of flows here. It's not like, okay, here's this event, all right, we're done, now we can jump to 1 Kings. You can't do that with 1 Samuel 17 because it doesn't stop. The battle just kind of overflows into a victory parade, into what happens in chapter 18, results, like the spoils of victory are now handed to David as an indication here that this truly is the anointed one, not Saul. This one here, the Lord is with. And people begin to recognize that. And it just flows. So it's a beautiful section here, a great section to see how the Lord lifts up this man, this young man David, his choice. His popular legacy is being built here. It also produces a vicious jealousy in Saul. And we'll see that real quickly. It's at this point where Saul should be celebrating and instead he is plotting to put him to death. It's amazing what happens here. So when David's anointed as the next king, it's clear that God did not intend for David to immediately ascend the throne. There's going to be this, I guess, this probationary period where we start to transition from Saul into David, and they just kind of overlap. And David is now the one developing and growing, and you could see his legacy, his character, where we see he's a man after God's own heart. How do we know? Well, watch how it happens. And it just begins to unfold in the pages, and we see Saul, on the other hand, spiraling. He's like on the slippery slope. He's like on these hills now that they got snow on him. There's no tread, and he is sliding, and he's going fast, and he's dropping out of sight. And this is how this story really just kind of pushes this over the edge. David's victory over Goliath, really a turning point now in his life and in the life of Saul. And it not only gave Israel a renewed opportunity to strengthen themselves with respect to their enemies and what the conditions are, but it really confirmed to them that David is the one that we really need to be king. This is the one we'll get behind. And the Spirit of the Lord was truly with him. So a couple of things you want to make note as I'll begin to read the text here in a moment. Note these three things. As we see in chapter 16, that the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon him. Okay, what does that look like? Well, we're going to start seeing what it looks like here. First thing we see is that Spirit of God incites in David zeal for the Lord. Zeal. There's a passion here. That this is most important to him. This is what motivates him. This is what just changes his priority in the day. He's supposed to be taking care of sheep. He's supposed to be visiting with his brothers, figuring out what's going on. And then there's this voice, these words he hears, and suddenly it's like a switch turns on. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God, he says. So the Spirit of God is inciting this in him. Those words didn't come from Saul or any of the men in the armies of Israel and even his brothers, his older brothers. Second thing you want to see is God's Spirit also incites faith. Spirit of God is here, and you could see it because David's faith is just developed and it is molded, it is matured or maturing. I mean, can you imagine a teenager? Now, some teenagers can say things and say things not realizing what they're saying, and maybe that's David's case, but I think more so it is because the Spirit of the Lord has rushed upon him, and he says this, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." I mean, who has such boldness and confidence and courage to say that? That comes from the Spirit. And so here's David. He's marked by this. And also, this God's Spirit incites wisdom. He's not just with just a rash throwing himself out there with a crazed panic trying to go and tackle this giant. No, he's thinking, okay, someone has to take this battle. And what happens here is God's Spirit incites this wisdom in him, and he's restrained from an emotional outburst and just relies not on human strength, but he's focused on defeating the enemy in humility in ways that he knows best, and knows that he does this because the Lord is with him, and he does it because he wants to honor the Lord. So there's a certain wisdom in the way he operates here, in the way he thinks. And this is different from Saul. Saul is one who's noted who acted with rashness, who didn't think. He just reacted, and he did things foolishly. And this will mark a difference between him and David, and we'll see that in David. So let's take a look at the text, chapter 16. Start with this. I'll give you a simple outline here. A man after God's own honor, and I'll give you a three-part outline, and there's three subpoints in each of these parts. The first is Goliath's challenge. Then we'll see David witnessing Goliath's challenge. And then we'll see David meets Goliath's challenge. So here's this one, this warrior that shows up on the scene, and that begins first, verses 1 to verse 11. Let's read that. Now the Philistines gathered their armies for battle, And they were gathered at Succo, which belongs to Judah, and encamped between Succo and Azekah in Ephes Damim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and encamped in the valley of Elah, and drew up in line of battle against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on the mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on the mountain on the other side, with a valley between them. And there came out from the camp of the Philistines a champion named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a helmet of bronze on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze, and he had bronze armor on his legs, and a javelin of bronze slung between his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron, and his shield-bearer went before him. He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why have you come out to draw up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and are you not servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves. Let him come down to me. Even if he's able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us." And the Philistine said, "I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Okay, here's the challenge. First test, really, of David's legacy. David's not even here. These are the armies that David will rule over and lead one day. And we're going to face a person here. This person is a Philistine warrior who defies and dishonors and mocks the name of God and the armies of Israel. And to mock the armies of Israel is basically to mock the God of their armies. They're tied together. My gods, cursing by my gods, cursing your gods. Defying and dishonoring and blaspheming the gods of his enemies. Will David tolerate this? Is David the type of person who will, where something like this will sit well with him? Should David mind his own business? Just stay with the sheep, David. Should David just concern himself with whatever is at home? I just want to be a farmer. I want to stay out of war. Well, the Philistines are the ones who came into battle. The Philistines are the seacoast Canaanites on the Palestinian coast. And Israel's up in the hills, the highlands and the hills. And they would come up and do incursions and make attacks and just irritate Israel. And they would constantly do this. And so Israel always was on the defense. And when the Philistines rose up, they'd have to summon the armies and move down and draw a line of battle somewhere. In this particular case, it's in this valley of Elah. And so they would draw off their lines from one mountainside to the other, which are really hills across from each other. They could see each other from a mile or two away. And so they would set things up here in this battle. What we're looking for here is the same type of zeal for God's honor, for such defiance. We're looking for here, is it in David? It's certainly not in Saul. You see that in these statements. When Saul and all Israel heard the words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. So they're shaking, they're afraid, they're dismayed, they don't know what to do. It's very interesting that David had no response like that. His response was entirely different. But we're looking for that zeal. It's kind of like the zeal that Henry Martyn, you're familiar with him as a missionary in India, in Persia, in another century, whereas he observed the people who would not believe in the gospel and would bow down to other gods and live in such sin. He observed that and he said, "I cannot endure existence if Jesus was not glorified. It would be hell to me if he were to be always thus dishonored." So that's zeal. That is passion for Christ's glory on the field of missions. That was Henry Martyn. Well, what's Goliath? What does he do? He creates the crisis. He creates the situation here that something needs to happen. And it creates an opportunity to see who rises up, who's going to rise up. So we see, first of all, and I'll give you three parts here, this challenge. A confrontation, a challenge, and a consternation. First is the confrontation. Philistines are the confronters. They confront and face off with the Israelites here in verses 1 to 7. And they have a particular giant who is with them, who's an amazing person, considering his stature. Philistines were warlike, and they liked the battle, and they liked to take on Israel. And these invasions were perpetual. Spring and summertime, another invasion would come from the Philistines. And note the impressive physical specimen here. I'm going to want to read through that again of this man, Goliath. Basically, about 9.5 feet tall. He's one of the giants, the Nephilim, and the sons of Gath. Here he is, this tall person, and he's got armament that no one can wear. It's too heavy, it's too massive. He is an impressive and intimidating individual. And his whole point here is to stand up, I'll go one-on-one with anybody to try to intimidate Israel into subjection and submission. Because he knows he could beat anybody, at least in his mind. Saul, on the other hand, in his typical depressed, irrational rage, and he's struggling, he's tormented by evil, now is forced to summon his armies to face off with this, and now he's faced with this challenge. What's he going to do? And note with this physical challenge and this particular person, there's no doubt about it, Goliath makes an impression upon the whole ranks of Israel. And by sight, Israel and Saul have reason to fear. By sight, cowering, hesitating. But remember that verse back in chapter 16, verse 7, when Samuel was looking at the older brothers of David? Surely, this is the one the Lord's going to anoint. And the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not look on the appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him, for the Lord sees not a man as a man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart." It was a good example of man looking on the outward appearance and just seeing the stature and seeing the impressive physical specimen this guy is, and everybody's fearful. They don't know what to think. They're cowering. They're hiding in their tents. They back off. Well, that's the confrontation, the challenge are the words of Goliath. He defies the ranks of Israel. He curses the God of Israel. From his perspective, he was invincible in a hand-to-hand combat, and his gods will be on his side, and he will prove that his gods are more powerful than your gods. This is his challenge. That's what verse 8, 9, and 10 reveal. And then the consternation in verse 11 is Saul and Israel dismayed and terrified. They're the ones with consternation now. They're the ones who are dismayed and greatly afraid. Okay, so here's the first part of the scene that sets up the narrative for us. Finding any formidable opposition to the Philistine challenge will be impossible in the ranks of Israel's army at this point. Who's going to rise up? Who's going to take him on? Is there anybody? Will Eliab, the oldest brother of David? No, he doesn't rise up. Will his other brothers rise up? Anybody? Are there any particular persons named that had a reputation and a legacy of the ultimate warrior, awesome warriors in the ranks of Saul's army? We don't have any. Do you remember when later on here, if you've read through this whole narrative, when David ruled the army and here are these leaders, the Joabs and the others, and then there was these others, families, there were named people. There were special individuals who had great skill who could take on anybody, it seemed like. There's something about that leadership of David that incited in the people this courage and this just this zeal and this power and this strength. That was not the case right now. Saul was leading the people down at this point. So that's the first thing we see the challenge. The second part here, verse 12 to 39, David witnesses Goliath's challenge. David witnesses this. So looking at verse 12, let's read that. Now, David was the son of an Ephrathite of Bethlehem in Judah named Jesse, who had 8 sons. In the days of Saul, the man was already old and advanced in years. The 3 oldest sons of Jesse had followed Saul to the battle, and the names of his 3 sons who went to the battle were Eliab, the firstborn, the next to him was Abinadab, and the 3rd, Shammah. David was the youngest. The 3 oldest followed Saul, but David went back and forth from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem, For 40 days, the Philistine came forward and took his stand morning and evening. So David's kind of, his job is to play the harp, keep Saul happy, and then when he's not doing that, quick go back, watch the sheep. Take care of his father's sheep, his father's old. His job was to be a shepherd and a song player for Saul. He's not called into the army. He's the youngest. He's just a young man. His older brothers are the soldiers. But that gives him an opportunity. That gives him an opportunity here. Verse 17, and Jesse said to David, his son, take for your brothers an ephah of this parched grain and these 10 loaves and carry them quickly to the camp to your brothers. Also take these 10 cheeses to the commander of their 1,000. See if your brothers are well and bring some token from them. Now Saul and they and all of the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. And David rose early in the morning, left the sheep with the keeper, took the provisions, and went as Jesse had commanded him, and he came to the encampment as the host was going out to the battle line, shouting the war cry. And Israel and the Philistines drew up for battle, army against army. And David left the things in charge of the keeper of the baggage and ran to the ranks and went and greeted his brothers. And as he talked with them, behold, the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, came up out of the ranks of the Philistines and spoke the same words as before. And David heard him. This is the turn right here. David heard him. Philistine present their ultimate warrior, their titan, their superhero. And now who's presented from Israel? It says here, verse 12, now David, son of an Ephrathite of Bethlehem, of a man named Jesse, the youngest of 8, watching sheep, we present you David, the champion and a young shepherd boy. Great story for movies, books. This is how the story goes. David is here, and David hears. David's not a warrior, though we might look at that. The way he was a shepherd seemed like he was pretty talented, pretty good. He's a shepherd. He's a personal messenger of his father. He's a harp player, a lyre player, sent back and forth in the battle, bringing gifts and receiving news and making sure his dad has heard the latest. He's kind of like a 10th century Instagram, just kind of going back and forth as quickly as we can. And I want to know what's happening. I want to know the condition of my sons and whatnot. And that's just his job, nothing more. But he's there and he hears. So we see the confrontation again, the challenge and the consternation. The confrontation, David appears in the Israelite camp all the way to verse 22. 40 days this has been going on. Now he's here. He goes up to the battle line and he hears the taunts from Goliath. The challenge is he hears Goliath's defiance. He hears what Goliath is saying. And that will spark the passion of this man of God, of God's own honor. That will stir the spirit within him. It didn't stir the spirit of Saul to muster up strength to go and fight because the spirit had been taken from Saul. He was now hiding in his tent. It could have been the whole enemy rank lined up in the battle formation and him looking at that, let's take him on. No, that's not what stirred him up. It was what the Philistine said that caused him to enter into the battle. What did he say? See, the point of this is, again, it's not a battle. It's not about Goliath. It's what Goliath said. That's the point that stirs the spirit in the heart of David, and David needs to act because of what he heard. And the consternation is now the next verse, is verse 24. He begins to converse with the fearful Israelites, his angry brother, and an indecisive King Saul. Watch how this goes. Verse 24, all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were much afraid. 40 days this goes on. And the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who's come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel. And the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches and will give him his daughter and make his father's house free in Israel. Basically, you will never be taxed. You'll be married to a princess, and I will give you money. I mean, he's bribing whoever would be willing to go. And David said to the men who stood by him, "What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? What will be done for him? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" The people answered him in the same way, "So shall it be done to the man who kills him." Okay? Now Eliab, while this is going on, he's conversing. Eliab, the oldest brother, and here we go, sibling rivalry comes right into the play. I mean, this is real life, right? Older brother, would you just go home? Quit your rudeness. Get back to work. Watch the sheep. We're the older ones. We'll take care of this, is the attitude. The eldest brother heard him speak to the men. Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, "Why have you come down? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? That's your responsibility. Take care of these few sheep. This over here, this is way above your head, young man." It's kind of denigration that he gives to his brother. And David said, "What have I done now?" Well, let me back up here. "I know your presumption and the evil of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle. You just want to fight. You just want to pick up your sticks and act like a soldier." David said, "What have I done now? Is it not just a word?" And he turned away from him toward another and spoke in the same way, and the people answered him again as before. Okay, we've seen that time and a time. This type of stuff go on in siblings. When the words that David spoke was heard, they repeated them before Saul and sent for him, and Saul did. And David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "You're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you're but a youth, and he has been a man of war from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant used to keep sheep for his father. When there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb from the flock, I went after him, struck him, delivered it out of his mouth. And if he rose against me, I caught him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them, for he has defied the armies of the living God." David said, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." Saul said to David, "Go, the Lord be with you." I mean, this is amazing. He's having to convince this elder warrior king, let me go and do this. And of course, King Saul, indecisive, "You can't do this, you're too young. He's too experienced. This is a bad idea." His brothers are taunting him. His brothers are trying to send him home. "Just go home. Get out of here. It's none of your business. Mind your own business." But David is driven, is he not? He's driven by what he heard. Something must be done about this one who has defied the armies of God, the living God. Something must be done to deliver us from him. And he walks by faith, and he walks in courage and trust in the Spirit of God to be with him. "I cannot go with these, for I have," as he then says, he gives him, let me continue to read. "Saul clothed David with his armor. He put a helmet of bronze on his head, clothed him with a coat of mail. David strapped his sword over his armor, and he tried in vain to go, for he had not tested them. Then David said to Saul, 'I can't go with these, for I have not tested them.' So David put them off, and he took his staff in his hand and chose 5 smooth stones." That's how he's going to arm himself. "I will do this. Let me do it. God will be with me. I know he will." You know what? May we have such courage and zeal like this man David, wisdom like this, when we go into the world. Spirit shows his presence here in the heart and zeal of this servant of the Lord. And then the third part at the end of this is the best part, right? It's the victory. David meets Goliath's challenge. It's amazing the fearlessness of this young man in the face of a giant. But zeal for the Lord is what has consumed him at this point. So he goes out, picks 5 stones, because he picked 5 stones, from the brook and put them in his shepherd's pouch. His sling was in his hand, and he approached the Philistine. And the Philistine moved forward and came near to David with his shield bearer in front of him. And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. And the Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his God. So now we see again the confrontation, which leads to the challenge, which leads to a consternation. The confrontation here, David and Goliath face off. This would take place in the valley bottom below as they would come down the hillsides and meet one-on-one. The challenge now is they're summoned, as Goliath says, and curses him by his gods. David then responds to this challenge. And look what he says. Continue, verse 44. And the Philistine said, "Come to me, and I will give you the flesh, give your flesh to birds of the air and to the beasts of the field." And David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied." Remember what is motivating him right now. The reason why he's entering the battle was that right there. He's not looking at his size. He's not looking at the weapons. He's looking at the offense that is brought to the name of God. Then he says, "This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand. I will strike you down and cut your head off. And I'll give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all of this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with sword and spear, but the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand." I believe David learned that lesson. All he has to do is look at the history of Israel, look back to Joshua, look back to Moses, and see, there is the Lord. When the Lord was with us, this was the outcome of the battle. And if the Lord is with us and he is with me, I know how this will turn out. I know where this will go. This is the type of heart that the new king should have. This is the type of faith and motivation and courage that the Spirit of the Lord was stirring and developing and growing in this young man who would be king. This is the type of heart, if we could say that, for the honor of God that is in Christ. It's Christ-like to be this way. Now watch how it turns. Verse 48. When the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand into his bag, took out a stone, slung it, struck the Philistine on his forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell on his face to the ground. That's it. That quick. And all you heard was a big thud of this body, of this giant coming down. One sling, one throw, dead Philistine. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and struck the Philistine and killed him. There was no sword in the hand of David. Then David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword, that's Goliath's sword, drew it out of its sheath, and killed him and cut off his head with it. When the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. There's the consternation. Confrontation, challenge, Goliath put to death. This young man stands up over him, and then it all turns. No longer was it Israel who was dismayed and fearful. Now the Philistines turn and flee. The tables have turned quickly. And the men of Israel and Judah rose with a shout and pursued the Philistines as far as Gath and the gates of Ekron, so that the wounded Philistines fell on the way from Shaaraim as far as Gath and Ekron. And the people of Israel came back from chasing the Philistines. They plundered their camps. David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his armor in his tent. And so there's the spoils and the victory. And what happens here is this amazing victory. It's a wonderful scene. Now I want you to see this. At one point, this would have been Saul. If you go back to chapter 11, in verse 5, just read this for you. And it is how Saul was. he had that type of courage. Right now, he's dismayed. He's terrified. He's in a tent. He's bribing whoever. I'll give you this, this, and this if you go and fight this champion. I mean, he's not willing to step up, and he's trying to get someone else to be willing to step up and lay their life on the line. This is a different Saul from what we see in chapter 11, verse 5. Now behold, Saul was coming from the field behind the oxen, and Saul said, "What is wrong with the people that they are weeping?" So they told him the news of the men of Jabesh, and the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon Saul when he had heard these words, and his anger was greatly kindled. He took a yoke of oxen, cut them in pieces, sent them throughout all the territory of Israel by the hand of the messengers, saying, "Whoever does not come out after Saul and Samuel, so shall it be done to his oxen." And the dread of the Lord fell upon the people, and they came out as one man. When he mustered them at Bezek, the people of Israel were 3,000, and the men of Judah 30,000. And they said to the messengers who had come, or 300,000, not 3,000. And they said to the messengers who had come, "Thus shall you say to the men of Jabesh Gilead, tomorrow by the time the sun is hot, you shall have deliverance." When the messengers came and told the men of Jabesh, they were glad. Therefore the men of Jabesh said, "Tomorrow we will give ourselves up to you, and you may do to us whatever seems good to you." The next day Saul put the people in three companies. They came into the midst of the camp in the morning watch and struck down the Ammonites until the heat of the day, and those who survived were scattered so that no two of them were left together. That's the type of leader that Saul was, could have been. It turns out he's not anymore, because the Spirit of the Lord had rushed upon him then. Now the Spirit of the Lord is upon David. And now you see the hand of God acting in this way. And the people followed. The people respond quickly, and the soldiers were all over this. Victory is at hand because of David. And they rushed upon the scene, and the spoils of victory were right there. So what a great scene. What a great history. This battle is not wrested away. It's not wrested away from the glory and honor of the Lord. David makes sure of that. This is not about David. It's not about who is stronger. This is about, by David's own words, this is about the Lord. This is about defending the honor of the Lord, defying the Lord, and the battle is the Lord. He made sure that God was the one who got the glory out of this. The victory is given entirely to the hand of the Lord. That all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, he says. So this is the point. This is where he's driven, and this is the type of man that would rule Israel. So what can we learn from this? Let me conclude here. What do we got? Yeah, we're on time. Just a few things that we can take. First, the honor and glory of God should take priority over all. And that's clear. If you want an example in David, here it is. That's what just turned him on a dime. As he's meeting up with his brothers, he hears this, and suddenly it's like he is like a dog on a bone for the glory of God. Whether you eat or whether you drink, you do all to the glory of God, or whether you go to war, whatever it is. Secondly, this world and your life, in your life, there will be those who defy God. There will be those who defy the honor of his name and defy his word and his ways. This doesn't mean take out rocks and start throwing it at them. You must not be dismayed. You must not cower in such abject pride from people. But God's honor is worth standing up for and fighting for. Let's keep that in mind. And the church starves for leaders who will lead with that passion for the glory and honor of the Lord. The people of God need to be stirred up by persons of zeal and faith and wisdom like David had. That's something that we can think about and consider. Courage doesn't make you invincible, by the way. The Spirit of the Lord will. The Spirit of the Lord with you is what makes your work invincible. And by the way, like Daniel and his friends, when they're in the fiery furnace, if I die in the process of standing up for the honor of God, I will not give glory to these false gods. I will not bow down and worship them, King Darius, even if it costs me my life. If it had cost David his life, what would be the legacy? He fought for the honor of the name of God for his glory. I will not bow down to your gods. Okay, keep that in mind. Christ will always be driven with this type of zeal for the honor of God, consumed with it. So must we. And God will be glorified. He will defend his own honor, and so should we. So this is where the story kind of swirls around. This is the theme. This is the movement here in the heart of David. We want to see that. A man after God's own honor. Are you a man or a woman after God's own honor? Let's pray. Lord, I do thank you for this wonderful story of history and these people that you mark out for us to see and read and learn. These are examples for us. There are good examples. There are also bad examples. Here is a good example. Here is a high point of this man of God. And we're thankful for such an example. It is a lesson for us all. We desire, Lord, to live in giving ourselves as living sacrifices for your honor, for your glory, to defend it, to proclaim it, to live for it. And may your name be glorified through what we do and what we say. We will hear this week. We will witness this week. We will observe this week people who do not live for your honor, and will verbalize that, and will curse God, and will speak of lies and speak of dishonorable things. We will see this. We will observe it. Lord, may we not cower in such pride and such blasphemy. May we speak for your honor. May we stand up for what is right and what is true and what is marked by your name and your character. May we live for that, Lord. May we be driven and prioritized in our passion and our zeal and what motivates us. May that be first. Lord, guide us and fill us this week and come upon us in that way that we would be people who live in the Spirit of God by his direction and by his control. We thank you again as we pray in Christ's name. Amen.